I'm Lauren.
And I'm Cheryl.
And on this episode of Lit Chicks Read, Cheryl and I chat with author Robin Lee. She's an incredibly accomplished woman with a long list of acting credits, but we know her best for her debut published novel and one of our favorite books, The Idea of You. All right, Lit Chicks, we are here today with a very special guest, Robin Lee, who is the author of The Idea of You. This is actually one of my and Cheryl's favorite books, right?
Sure is.
It's actually one of the books that got me back into reading. So we are very thrilled to have Robin here today. Robin, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. We're thrilled to chat with you. We love this book so much, as I said, and we're just excited to sit and chat with you about it. So yeah, let's get going, right?
I think when we, I don't know if you know this, Robin, but you're our first guest on
this podcast. Oh, I'm
you are.
You are. So, thanks for taking that chance on us.
When Lauren and I started talking about doing a podcast and seriously talking about plans, I wanted so much for this to be our first book because, like Lauren already said, this book got her back into reading and she recommended it to me. And I've always been a voracious reader, but this book really got me back into, you know, I was living the season of kids and serious reading and, you know, like parenting books and self-help books and things like that. And this book got me back into reading for fun and just for the love of it. And I have not stopped since she recommended it last year. So to have you here is just really perfect for kicking off our podcast.
I love hearing that. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So that kind of leads me to my first question. Why is this the story? We know, actually, you know what? Let's do your little elevator pitch. If someone is listening to this podcast, they of course have read the book. I mean, who hasn't at this point? But if you, Robin, just want to give a general, your little elevator pitch of what your book is about, just as like a little recap.
So Celine Marchand is a 39-year-old sophisticated divorcee living in Los Angeles. She owns an art gallery. She's got a 12-year-old daughter, Isabel, who is obsessed with this British boy band. And so Len gets kind of pulled into taking the daughter and her friends to a concert and meet and greet with the band, August Moon. And one of the guys in the band falls for Celine, and he's half her age. And they embark on this relationship that starts off as a series of trysts, but very quickly becomes something very intense and genuine. And it's a kind of a love affair for the ages. But it affects a relationship that affects every aspect of her life in sometimes unexpected ways.
Perfect. Yes. Very much so. So that leads me to, I feel like this is a very unique story. Mm-hmm. Why is this the story that you wanted to tell?
Oh, goodness. I'm trying to think of like what really brought it about.
And
I've written for myself for years and years and years and written books that I never had any intention of selling. And then I wrote a book that I had intention of selling and couldn't sell it. And then I stopped writing for a bit. And then surely, I guess, after turning 40 or just being around turning 40, I guess I'm an actress as well. And I have been acting for about 25 years now or so. But I'd been in LA acting for a while. And when you're a woman and you're turning 40, suddenly the roles just become fewer and farther between. And then they're kind of reductive. You know, you're the mom or you're the lawyer, whatever. We kind of lose agency. Like they're not the great, powerful roles that are sometimes are there for like big stars, like, you know, people like Nicole Kidman or Reese Witherspoon Viola Davis get to sink their teeth into, but you don't see very many of those characters. And most of the woman characters just kind of like, you become like kind of background and you're just kind of serving a purpose. And I would see all these descriptions like 40 was once attractive, but now very tired, whatever. Like,
my gosh. What?
Wow.
And so I was very sensitive about that. And goodness, years ago, it was 2014. It was in the spring and my husband was away on a business trip and I'd fallen down this rabbit hole looking at bands on YouTube, music videos on YouTube. And I came across this one band with a guy that was like absolutely stunning, but obviously inappropriately young. And when my husband came back from our trip, we were at an event and I joked with him. I was like, I found this perfect guy. I'm thinking about running off and leaving you and the kids, but he's like 20. How do you feel about that? And he laughed at me and he's like, you are crazy. He's like, but that would make a great book. Mm. And it was like the second he said it, it was just so apparent to me, like, what if you were this normal woman with kids living your professional life? And I didn't want it to be like this huge thing, like he tears apart the marriage. So like, you're already divorced.
Right.
And you somehow your paths cross with this guy that is ridiculously famous and beautiful and half your age, and he's into you. And suddenly something like sparks. And what if it's just as told as realistically as possible? Also, like, knowing all the like the darker sides of celebrity that I see here in Hollywood. And so like not like glossing this over, this kind of beautiful, glamorous, oh my gosh, we did this and we did this, we took limousines and everything was fabulous. And I wanted to show like sometimes it's not so fabulous, but I wanted to make it as real as possible. And I wanted it to be a story about a woman like turning 40, but also like reclaiming her sexuality and her identity and being totally viable and sexual and vulnerable and just full. Like, I wanted to show all the sides of what it is to be a woman and not have this character who's just kind of like two-dimensional and like put in a box. Like, she's not going to just be a mom, you know, and she's not going to just be a divorcee. It's going to be like this fully formed flesh woman. And so I thought, God, that would be so much fun to write. And I started it immediately. Like, it was so clear in my head. She was clear. He was clear. The daughter was clear where I was going to take the story. Like, I don't want to say that, you know, I didn't torture myself over certain parts. I absolutely did. But I knew the story and I knew the characters and I knew that I was the one to tell it.
Hmm. Was it fun? Was it fun, like you said, to write? Like, other than those parts you tortured yourself over?
Right. It was incredibly joyful and fun until it wasn't. And it wasn't when I realized it was ending and I knew I wasn't going to be spending all this time with them, it was very emotional.
Right.
And then there's also a period that I felt like I was so attached to them. And I had these two people living in my head for like a good 15 months. Like, and there were like three of us. And like, I'd have a thought and I was like, is that a Hayes thought or my thought or a Celine thought? All these weird things would happen. And I felt so completely connected and living and breathing these characters' lives. And I knew it was a great story. I knew it was timely. I wanted to be the first one to write it in the way that I was going to write it. And so I was kind of rushing against time. And I also felt like social media plays a big part of the story. Mm-hmm. And that was evolving so quickly. Like, when I wrote it, there was Snapchat wasn't even around. You know what I mean? Like, there are little TikToks around. Like, they're,
yeah.
So I didn't want this to sound old and dated by the time I sent it out to put it out on submission. So I had to like rush to do it. And I did it in real time. Like, the story takes place over 12 months and I wrote it over 15. So I was never more than 3 months behind.
Wow.
What was actually,
I love that.
It was April 2014 to April 2015.
Like, living the story in real time.
Living the story in real time.
Love it. And like you said, it's sort of like, we said already, it's unique. You know, you probably didn't have to rush because I don't think that I've seen this story since either. But I really feel like it's unique. A lot of the books that we read over and over again, they have those same tropes, right? Like, especially romance novels, which I know yours is not a romance. a love story, but go on.
Yeah, I think that gave me the edge because I did not read a lot of romance prior to reading this book. I read much more now because I have a lot of friends now who are romance writers. And so I want to support them. And I got sucked into that world, but I didn't read romance at all. And so I didn't know the tropes. I didn't know what I should be doing. I just kind of wrote my story. I read a lot of literary fiction where, you know, you kind of, I don't want to say you don't have rules, but you don't, you know, it's kind of unexpected. You're on this journey and you're following the protagonist and anything could happen. And I love that freedom. Mm-hmm. Like, I love not knowing mm-hmm. where the author's going to take me, like knowing that, trusting the author from page one and feeling like they're going to take on a ride and then just allowing yourself to go on the ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the way you wrote it, I know at least for me and everyone I've recommended this book to, you think it's, you almost like, you know, you go into it, right? You think it's a romance and it's not, right? Clearly by the end. And it just wrecks you. So I feel like so many souls have been wrecked reading this book because what we all want to happen doesn't happen. But we can see why, right? That that's not.
And Niles, I really think it's where you're coming from. Like if you're coming from the literal world, you're not expecting, there's so many clues in there that how this relationship is going to end up. And romance readers just blow right through them. They're just like, I didn't see that. I didn't
see that. It's funny.
It's when they go back the second or third time, they're like, oh my God, you said that. And I was like, I did.
Robin, I literally just said this to Cheryl. So I read this book a year ago, almost to the day. And I reread it, gearing up to have this interview with you. And I messaged Cheryl. I go, I have a totally different impression of Solène the second time around. Like, I'm just seeing where there were so many insecurities in their relationship. And Cheryl brought up a good point. She's like, well, we know the ending now. We didn't the first time around. So you blow through it because it's so good. And I finished it in a day, literally.
Yeah.
I couldn't put it down. But now that we know how it ends, you go back and you do see those signs and you're like, wait. And I said to her, I was like, I just felt so bad for Hayes because this whole time, you know, he was like, please don't let them get to you. And, you know, and that's obviously what happens. So it's, it's funny you say that because I literally just had that conversation.
We did. I've read it a few times and I've listened to it a couple of times now. And definitely I had that same experience. The first time I knew nothing going into it.
Right.
I didn't have any preconceived ideas except that Lauren said it was amazing. And so I was surprised and shocked and wrecked by the ending and then understood the ending and then went back and read it again with that perspective. You know, there's one line you wrote towards the end where we're just going to be frank on this podcast, just like you are in the book, where she talks about, you know, that maybe her whole life she was going around with a haze-shaped vagina and just didn't know it. I feel like now I have this haze-shaped crack in my heart, like just left behind at the end where, you know, I'm broken for both of them. Mm-hmm. But knowing this is like his first big heartbreak, I don't know. I know.
It's sad. But so that.
But that, wonderful.
Yes, wonderful. But that does lead to my next question, or our next question, I should say. So now I'm 35, turning 36 next week. Cheryl is
45.
Right. So I think our views, I mean, I'm, as you said, you know, when you hit 40, like I just had a lady doctor appointment the other day and he's like, well, you're in your mid to late 30s now and we got to start talking about some things. And I'm like, oh man, like, wait, that was like a punch in the gut. I'm like, wait a minute.
That's not a baby. I know.
But are you receiving different responses to this book from a younger?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that, because we're older and we're moms and have kids. So we kind of see it from that perspective. But tell us a little about that.
We're prime, Lauren. We're prime.
Prime. Sorry, not older.
When I wrote it, I thought, oh, this book will appeal to women 30 to 50. I thought like they could really 35 to 45, but 30 to 50. Mm-hmm. And I'm so surprised when women in their 20s love it, when women in their 60s and 70s love it. It's really kind of incredible. But I think that people take away different things from it. And I think they take away from, depending on how old they are, whether or not they're married, have ever been married, whether or not they have kids. Like I feel like they get it on multiple level, they appreciate multiple layers depending on where they are in their lives or what they've experienced in their lives. And I think that the younger reader, especially if she hasn't been married, is kind of like, well, why would you throw that out the door? Why would you give up a relationship like that, love like that? You don't know if it's going to come again. I'm dying to have something like this. And I think they don't get the weight of what it is to be a parent and to put someone else's happiness before your own in a way that you almost don't even, you don't second, I hate, this is awful. I hate to bring this up, but there was in the shooting last week, because that's all I can think about.
Yeah.
There's a story about one mom who, like, she was trying to get in. She drove 40 miles, was trying to get in. The guy, one of the police officers, put her in handcuffs. She got someone to, under a man, she jumped the fence, went in, grabbed her two kids, and got out. And it's like, that's the kind of thing you do. Like, you're not even thinking about anything but the survival of your kids. And
that's right.
I think being a mother, everything else falls by the wayside. Like, this person you brought into your life is like the most important thing. And that person's well-being and happiness is the most important thing. And everything else be damned. And I think on a much, obviously much smaller scale, that's kind of what Selene is going through. Like, this is, I'm in love with this guy and he's making me very happy. But like, the most important thing in my world is completely distraught and suffering. And while I appreciate that we go through that, it's also kind of sad that we stop putting ourselves first.
It's true.
And I don't know that men do that.
No. Well, even in the book you have, you know, Selene's ex
is
married to someone younger, gets her pregnant, gets married. He isn't subject to any of those same rules and criticisms. And in fact, he's the one like telling her she's going to destroy her daughter over this, et cetera. It's completely different. Standards.
That's right. And part of it's that maybe we're just hardwired that way to protect our offspring in a way that they're not. I don't know what it is. And maybe it's a bit of that, and it's a bit of society and the expectation that we are the mothers and that's what we do.
Yeah.
Right. So I do think that women who are mothers and close with their children or what have you, especially their children are younger, respond to this differently than women who have not had kids.
Right. And especially the age Isabel is, she's 12.
Yeah.
That's a hard, I mean, I remember
being a really hard age. Right.
I remember.
Yes. Very hard. Now add the social media piece.
Right.
Now, you know, so I know even, you know, as a mom myself, I would have done the same thing because your kids, you know, yes, there are moments I put myself first, but in a situation like this, I wouldn't. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, you know, put mommy first in the sense that like, you know, I need 10 minutes to go and read a book and like calm my mind. Right. That's different than this, you know?
And she tried, right? Like she tried for a while, even after Isabel knew about the relationship. And so she did it until she couldn't do it anymore. Like it just the odds got stacked or the factors got stacked to the point that it wasn't worth it anymore. She had to choose a different way.
But that also leads me to the question everyone's asking, a sequel. I know you probably get asked this all the time.
Every day. I added up the days. I was like, it's been 5 days. Like I did the math recently, how many days I've been asked for a sequel. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wrote this to be a, you know, I mostly read literary fiction and they're mostly just one book and you're done. And that's all the time you have with those characters and you're grateful for it. And then you move on to the next book and the next story. And that's kind of what I thought this was going to be. It's only because it's been positioned as a romance that so many people are expecting more. And they're expecting a happy ending.
Right.
Yeah. And
they don't care. It's not always.
Right. Exactly. And I just feel like life isn't always like that.
No.
Like some of my best relationships where I felt like my heart was exploding, like didn't end happily, you know?
Same.
Right.
In all aspects of life, not even just, a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
So I think if you did write a sequel, we would all be game for it. But also if you don't, I do think the way this book ended for me was just, even though it wrecked my soul the first time around, you know what I mean? I personally am content with it. Do you know what I mean? Like this is their story and that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I love your voice. I would love for you to produce more work of any sort, of course.
Same. Like, I'll take any book.
any book. But I could see, you know, I don't think I could live through that again. Like I think if you revisited the characters, the expectation on you would be to give them the happy ending.
Right.
So it kind of depends if that's, you know, if you can't get them out of your head and you just end up getting to that place. I mean, how amazing would that be? But if this is what we have, this is amazing. And it is so different from everything else because we don't have that happy ending. We have this realistic story that is so, so beautiful and we never lose that.
Right.
And we can headcanon if we really have to. And I have a headcanon story for 5 years later.
And we can look forward to the film, which we know you can't say much about, but we are thrilled to see this come to the screen. So I have to admit, I was saying to Cheryl, I know Cheryl is now in your group. I have this book has such a following. It blows my mind. Yeah. I am in your Facebook group, and it's what's that?
It's a passionate bunch.
And
it's,
gosh, you are not kidding. It is the people who I don't know one person who's picked this book up and hasn't just fallen for it. It blows my mind just the following that it has. And I know we're all excited to see it on film. However, I'm sure you're feeling some pressure there too, because I think, you know, again, the expectation is like, I've seen it in that group. I'm like, whoo, okay, let's give it a minute. So, but the other thing is, Cheryl, actually, you brought this up. A lot of people say it's a Harry Styles fanfic, but it's
not. clear it up, Robin.
Clear the air there.
I think I get insulted by the fanfic thing.
Yes, I would think so.
Writing fanfic for Duran Duran in the 80s. So I know what fanfiction is. Like, I would just put myself in their lives and whatever. And then I stopped. And for, I don't know, 20, 30 years, whatever it was, I wrote my own original characters. And when I started writing this, I had a very specific idea of who he was going to be. And he was not Harry Styles. I will say that Harry influenced him to some degree, but there are probably 7 or 8 other people in there that are also, that also went into making Hayes Campbell, who are not as famous. Right. Or a couple of them are famous, but they're not famous in that capacity. And so you don't even think about that. Like, right. It wouldn't come to mind, but like, oh, that's right. She used, I definitely see some of that. But like, I mean, I had at least 2 ex-boyfriends maybe, or maybe my husband and an ex-boyfriend reached out and be like, hey, this is me. Or like, or this was us, right? And this part is like
new. Then,
and so I borrowed a lot from everything. So it's kind of, it's really interesting. So no, it's not Harry Styles. I gave him dimples and a good head of hair, and I put him in a boy band, but I was going to do that anyway. I mean, the whole idea is that the boy band thing comes with its own baggage, as opposed to just making him a star. And it's kind of like, I mean, what 40-year-old woman, successful 40-year-old woman, is dating a guy like in a boy band? Just saying boy band just seems like, but
and so the disparaging term, really.
It is, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because it is what it is, and they definitely serve a purpose, and they bring lots of people lots of joy, and and they should not be disparaged for appealing to. I've read interviews with maybe Harry on this, or other members of wrong group. Sorry.
That's my youth.
So I used to manage a singing group, and the group was produced by one of the New Kids way back in the day. And so I knew them, which is how I knew I could write this book, because I knew what that kind of energy was like, and what that crazy chaotic life on tour was like, and what the obsessive fandom was like. Like, I knew it up close. But I think it was Harry who said in an interview that we frown on young girl, like frowning on young girls and frowning on what young girls like. Like, we look down at it and we disparage it as not a valuable art. And why do we do that? Why do we criticize because they love it so much? Why do we find fault with that? Like, why can't we just hold it up and be like, this is something that appeals to them? That's wonderful. Why do we kind of disparage it because it's something that's liked by girls, you know?
Yeah. You brought that into the book here. There was like a lovely part where Hayes is associating with Insulin's art world. And there's a comment by her friend where she says, you know, boy bands, the Murakami of the music world. You can just look at them and be happy.
And I think it is. Sometimes that's what, I mean, I look at BTS now and like, I don't speak their language. I see them like on a, and I don't own their music. I can't even tell you the name of their song, but if they're performing on an award show, I'm watching it because they're so pretty to look at, and they move so like balletic, like they're like, oh, they're dance, whatever. I can't look at them and not smile. It's just something that puts a smile on my face. I'm not sitting there agonizing about all the other negative things that are going on in the world, and there's in our world, and there's so much. But for the second that they're on, you know, you just have a smile on your face, and it's kind of like what they do.
Yeah. Listen, I still am an NSYNC fan, so.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh my gosh, I still work out to Bye Bye Bye. I mean,
I'm hoping they have a reunion tour. I told my husband, I'm like, listen, NSYNC ever comes back and does a tour, I don't even care what the front row seats cost. I'm buying it. He's like, okay. Yeah.
I'm like, there's something out there. Also, because like to me, like that music also brings up like just joyous times of your life, like your youth.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And being a young girl and like a young screaming girl and what that felt like when, I don't know, just the rush of emotion.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, my
this reminded me. I do have Backstreet Boys tickets in July.
Do you? Oh, really?
Wow! What? I'm going. I'm excited.
I'm one of the only people I've seen like we've seen like Duran Duran, New Kids on the Block, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, and New Edition. Like all of them in concert, not together. I mean, like I've seen them all. I've never seen One Direction, but like I don't need to know what that excitement is. Like
right,
to know
right
in your heart and like
right.
And in your ear, and
you're like... Exactly. For what it's worth, I did not picture Harry Styles reading the book.
No, neither did I. I didn't know to.
I didn't either. I honestly didn't even hear that until after. And then I was like, I'm sorry to say this. I was like, who's Harry Styles again? I had to like Google. And I'm like, oh, him. Okay. And I'm like, yeah, that's not my Hayes. You know what I mean? So
well, to me, it was really important that he be posh. And Harry's not a posh guy. Yeah. And so when I'm picturing him, I'm not picturing Harry. Like I'm picturing this posh guy, but with dimples and a great head of hair. Like, and I spent a lot of time watching interviews with Prince Harry, Prince William, Eddie Redmayne, Benedict Cumberbatch, like all those guys who've gone to like Eton or Harrow or whatever, like those great British schools, just to get an idea of like what that is and how they carry themselves and their confidence and the way they speak and the way they articulate things. And it, to me, it's just like, I don't know, it's like poetry. I love a cute posh guy. And I just love it.
No wonder I love Hayes so much, because you've just named all my faves. All your faves.
Right. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to like roll them all up in a package and then throw in like an incredible amount of sex appeal. And
I mean, you made him perfect, like almost unattainably perfect, you know? Yeah.
That was my husband's one problem with the book. He's so perfect.
He's so perfect. But you know, it kind of goes along with it, because the whole idea is it starts as this fantasy, like all these people in their world have the fantasy of who Hayes Campbell is, and he's so so much wanting her to not see him as Hayes Campbell but as Hayes. But as we start with that fantasy and her, you know, thinking, could I have this? And then actually getting into it and the layers peel back and you realize like the gritty side and the rough side of celebrity.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
People don't tell you about.
Yeah. You know, I don't, I mean, again, being in a world of social media is just, yeah, I didn't envy that. You know what I mean?
No.
In the books, I would imagine, and that's why, again, by the end, like I can't imagine being a mom and having all of your intimate stuff be put on display, if we know the scene I'm talking about, you know, for your daughter who's 12, and that's a super impressionable age, your preteen, your hormones are, you know. Yeah, that's why, you know, I know everyone's like, they should have been together. It's a lot of people I've talked to. I wish they could have been together. And I'm like, yeah, but they just couldn't, you know, it just wouldn't.
I wish, but then understand why they couldn't be.
Yeah, but those weren't the circumstances I gave them.
Exactly. Like, right. Yeah. Exactly. That's not how the book ended.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a reason I wrote the book that way I once wrote.
Exactly. That. Exactly.
It was easy for me to. I could insert myself into Isabel's role very easily, even though now, obviously, I'm the mom. Right. I'm although Selene is way cooler than
She's
I am.
Way cooler than everyone.
Way. So being her age, reading it, but I remember being, when I was 12, that was the height of New Kids on the Block fame. Mm-hmm. And I was in love. I was a Donnie girl. You know, and there was no social media. I couldn't follow them. I had to go and buy my Tiger Beat. Yeah, plaster my locker.
Put the poster on the wall. We all did it.
But if I think about like what would have I couldn't even go to a concert. You know, it wasn't in our financial ability at the time. But if my mom had suddenly got together with Donnie Wahlberg. I know, like, my mind is blown.
Yeah, I know.
What would that be like?
It's really crazy to think about. I was a little younger than you, Cheryl. So for me, it was, again, Backstreet Boys. I can't imagine my mom with like Nick Carter.
Right. Oh my God. Well, Nick,
you know, right? I would be like, what? I felt for Isabel. And then I felt for her as well because, she's adjusting to changes with, again, her father and now all this with her mom. And, and I come from a split home. My parents divorced when I was young, and that in itself is hard.
Yes.
Now add in all of that other stuff and it's a lot on a child, and she's still
and Salem was very appreciative. I'm sensitive to that fact that people had already been through so much.
Like, right. So,
well, I was saying just a minute ago that I'm now Salem's age. I'm identify with more with the mom, and the way that you started this whole thing out by saying you were noticing being 40 in Hollywood and how the roles change and how it's not the same for men, right? Like men are out here using the same soap from head to toe, and we're like doing this 15-step regimen to like preserve and renew what we have. And Hayes, being a young kid, a young man, doesn't have that perspective that Solène has. Like for him, it's he just sees her as beautiful. But I think she, even though she is this amazingly successful, beautiful, confident, brilliant woman, she has this potentially internalized idea that she is sort of like in the bell curve, like coming down off her prime, right? And do you think, he tries his best to convince her that that's not how it is, and he loves her and she's beautiful and et cetera, et cetera. But, we see her being, how did you say it, Lauren? She wasn't, she's not exactly jealous, but she is insecure when she sees him with, previous relationships or a model at a party. And I think she just doubts herself because of the world that we live in and what I think there's actually one quote that I marked. I won't put you on the spot and make you do a Hayes accent. Although I really love your Hayes accent.
If
anyone hasn't listened to the audiobook, it's amazing.
Thank you.
But Hayes
Robin
says
narrates. So
yes, it's wonderful.
Extra special treat.
He says, I'm really happy when I'm with you. I get the feeling you feel the same way. And if that's true, I don't think you should give a fuck about what other people may or may not think of our age difference. Furthermore, if our ages were reversed, no one would bat an eyelash. Am I right? So now it's just some sexist, patriarchal crap. And you don't strike me as the kind of woman who's going to let that dictate her happiness. Which is true, but...
It's a scene in Mario's Fair. It's so funny. Because I feel like in this book, it comes back and it's like, oh, I knew where you were. I know what you were wearing. And I was like, oh, that wasn't me. Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way to overcome that, I think, for her.
Right. There isn't. And I think she is hung up on it, but she's aware of the world in a way that he's not, he's very much in a bubble.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, she's got 20 years on him. 20 years.
He's protected by fame, and he's also like destroyed by fame. But she's not protected by fame in the way that he is, and so she sees more of the reality of what it looks like from the outside, and what people are saying, and how it feels. And
yeah, it's wonderful though how you gave them, like, they are a 20 year age gap, but. I mean, are they really? Like, he's not an average 20-year-old. Posh. Yeah, he's posh. He's interesting. He's lived life. He's sown his wild oats. They're like equals, right? Yeah, an old soul.
I mean, I did that purposely. Like, I had to make him so that she would want to spend more than one night with him. So it wasn't about the sexual side of it. He had to be a conversationalist. He had to be smart. He had to be well-traveled. He had to have done interesting things so that they could talk and have, things in common and conversation. And so a part of that was having this posh background so that he'd grown up with money and he'd traveled and he'd seen things and done things and read and was well-read, et cetera, et cetera. And part of it was the fame part. And so that he'd lived a little, even by the time he was 20.
Yes. He really, he's like 28 or something.
No, right. he's not like a college co-ed, you know, like,
no,
like a frat guy.
So on that note, Robin, so this is the other thing I love about the book, is I love how each chapter is essentially a different place, right? Mm-hmm. In the world, the band's travels. So did you have one favorite place in particular, or a favorite scene, you know, in those places?
I don't think I do. I think I was in love with everything. Mm.
There's a whole Stop at Japan movement. Did you know that?
I know.
Don't go past Japan.
I don't know about that movement, though, because, you know, Japan is really almost bipolar, because they're both recognizing at that point, right? What's going to happen. They both know it. And they're, you know, he's for sure trying to fight it. She's resigned to it. And it's so wonderful, highs and low lows. So I think if I was going to stop anywhere, it would be before Japan. but I actually prefer to go right to the end. I want the story as you wrote it.
Japan is where I started crying every day as I was writing. Mm. And also, I also knew, like, I knew my outline, and I knew I had two more chapters, and it's like, I'm not going to write for these people anymore. They're not going to be in my life. And it was a really hard breakup for me as a writer with these characters. And I tell people now, like, I would go into my closet at night and curl up into a ball and cry, like, every night for a good, like, 6 months.
Really?
Like, every night, because I don't want my husband to hear me crying, but I would just I would just cry.
Yeah.
And I couldn't explain to him that I was crying for Hayes and I was crying for her.
Yeah.
But then I felt guilty that I had broken him, and it was awful. It was awful, awful, awful. And then, I put the book out into the world and be like, that was great. Can you do another one? And I'm
like, you know what though? I appreciate you sharing that with us, because I guess that's something I haven't really thought about, considering I'm not an author, but you know, you do get so emotionally invested because you're writing these characters. This is your book. Yeah. I guess I never really thought about the aftermath of
like coming down from that.
Yeah. Huh. Right.
And separating, being like, you guys have to go now. I need to live my life, and I need to think about new characters and new stories, and I have to let you go, and you have to let me go, because they still, I mean, for the longest time, they would talk to me and I'd be like, I don't hear you. I don't hear you. I'm done. So that book is out in the world. You can't say anything else to me. We're done. I really did think I was going crazy at a point. I really thought I should probably see a therapist. I'm not currently in therapy. I have been in the past, but not in like 20 years. So, but I thought about seeing a therapist. And then I had this fear, like, what if she fixes me and then I can't hear him anymore?
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
What if I lose Hayes's voice? Like, what if he, because I really felt like, I mean, more so than with Selene, I really felt like he was just talking to me. Like he would just tell me what to say. And like, sometimes I wasn't sure quite what the next line would be. And I was like, I'm just going to wait for you. I'm going to go for a walk. You let me know when you know what it is. Yeah, and and I'd be on the walk and he would just say, oh, it's just, this is a line. Sorry. I'm like, why did you do this?
I love hearing that though. That's such an interesting.
Yeah, it was really like, I can remember like very specific points. Like there was a scene in obviously spoiler alert. There's a lot of spoilers in here.
I mean, if they're listening, they've read it. So
when they're in Cannes before the first time they sleep together and they're going back to her hotel Martinez, and they're at the hotel door. And it's like, and she's ridiculously nervous because she knows what's going to happen and she knows it's going to change everything. And it might not be for the better. He might just be like, okay, I got what I wanted and have a safe trip back to America. Have a nice life. But she's super nervous. And I wanted him to say something that was going to kind of calm her nerves and like ease her and to be like, this is going to be okay. Right. But I wasn't sure what that was going to be. I couldn't figure it out. And that's why I went for a walk. And I remember exactly where I was when it came to me. And it was like, when he says, like, full disclosure, I bought my toothbrush, but I don't know if I did, and whatever. And I was like, it was so perfect.
Yeah. I did love that part.
That line and the follow up, right? Like broke the tension. Right. It was, that reminds me of the way you were saying he talks to you. So Lauren and I met through the Outlander fandom. 2 years ago now. We actually co-host. Lauren started a group for her community, people that were interested in the show, and expanded to the books. And so I'm one of her co-hosts on there. And the author of those books, Diana Gabaldon, she says the same thing. Like the characters are a part of her and they talk to her. So yeah. Like people will ask her, you know, is obviously that's a huge series of books. Yeah. But people will say, you know, is this person going to come back? Is this going to happen? She's like, I don't know. I have to wait for them to tell me.
Yeah, it's totally. Or sometimes I had an idea how a scene was going to go and someone would say something else and it would just like blow my mind. It's like, okay, I guess that's the direction we're going in now.
Yeah.
See, or even the one with, there's one with Selene and Lilit, and when Selene first tells Lilit that she's having this, this whatever, she's seeing Haze, and then I guess I'm going to get some. I forgot. Lilit steps out, she steps out to get some wine. She goes.
Yeah, she's like, I need some wine. Sit right on the floor.
It's on the floor, or whatever. And then she says, "Well, I assume there are others."
Oh yes, this yes. part. Yeah,
and it,
yeah.
it wasn't until Lilit said it.
Yeah.
That I even considered
it. Oh, yeah.
As a writer, as Selene. Like, I didn't even think about that. And then I was like, holy shit, they've been together for like 3 months. Of course he's out there fucking other people. Like, it didn't even dawn on me until Lilit gave me that line. And then that was one of the days that I had to close my computer and go and curl up in a ball and cry. And Eric's like,
right.
What's wrong? Eric is my husband. What's wrong? I was like, he's leaving the people I know. So if you can take a knot, like, no, he's in a boy band.
My goodness. So Selene's reaction must have been so pure then, like just
Pure. It was totally pure. And like, I was like, I'm going to vomit. Just give me a second. And then I was like, you know what? She's going to vomit too because she's feeling what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Like it was like, it didn't even cross my mind because I'm just completely naive or whatever. I didn't even think about the fact that there were probably other people.
I love that. And so going from that to the point where, you know, at some point Selene says, you know, that it is a choice.
Right.
And he does make that choice. That scene. So now we've talked about the film a little bit. I know that you're a producer on it, as is your husband. I'm just going to say, if you can work that dining table scene in there.
You know, technically I'm a producer. In reality, I've got very little pull.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know if it's going to look anything like my book at all. So we'll see.
Right.
We'll
see.
We're
going to cross our fingers for that.
We're going to cross our fingers.
Furniture. And the rosewood table.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine doing this book with this movie without that scene.
It's a very iconic scene.
I think so too. It really is.
Like huge.
And it was one of those few. I mean, no, I shouldn't say few because I feel like everything I could just picture vividly. But that was definitely very cinematic in my head as I was writing it.
Yeah. Lauren and my co-host in our Outlander group, she's a professor of design and has done some work with Herman Miller and stuff. And so that whole scene where they come into the house and naming all the furniture off, I was like, oh, she would love this. And I know exactly, I can picture myself there because I know what those pieces look like. Right. Yep. Loved it.
Yeah, I loved that too. Yeah, well, we're going to cross our fingers that we get that scene.
I'm crossing my fingers for you guys.
Yeah. There's a lot of scenes.
And I'm also going to tell them now, if they put it out in the world, like if they do that scene, I think it's better without a score. Like, I think that's better. It's more powerful.
Yeah. Ooh. Then we'll hear the same sounds that Selene describes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right?
Maybe not.
That's going to be some...
Yeah, maybe
pretty,
not.
Pretty That's high it. Rating there.
I was gonna say.
Maybe we just hear the waves outside.
So when you're shooting a film, first of all, there's a guy, a boom operator, right? There's a guy holding the boom in the scene with you. But usually the lead actors are mic'd. And I don't even know where one would put a mic in that. The mic is not just, it's usually like glued to your, like, taped to your skin or your shirt or whatever, and it goes down the wire goes down your dress or your blouse, and it's like, and it ties into a links into a pack that's usually put on your back somewhere, like around your waist, or if you're wearing a tiny dress, sometimes they put it on the inside of your thigh and they wrap it in a piece of spandex and attach it to your thigh. This is why when people say, like, making movies, like the sex scenes can be like, you it's not this intimate thing. You've got this mic right. And it's strapped to your leg and whatever.
I didn't realize that. Now in my head, I'm thinking of all the
right. But where do they put them? Right, then?
That's what I'm going to think now going forward.
The centerpiece, right. Maybe the centerpiece on the table.
Exactly. Like if it's that close, you might attach it to the pillow or somewhere. There's not going to be any kind of friction. Like you moving the material is not going to make too much noise. Yeah. But then little things like the sound she hears in the book, those are usually added afterwards. I think it's a Foley artist.
Oh, yes, yes,
so
yes.
He's like, he's alone, some guy alone in a booth, like making like squishy noises. And I don't even know how he would come up with that.
Well,
it is a funny image.
I have some ideas, but.
Oh, that's gotta be an awkward job. Oh my gosh, I'm learning all things that I didn't know before. Yeah.
Speaking of awkward, we said that you recorded the audiobook, which is such a great, it just seems natural, you being an actor. Right. Was that, did you ask for that or was that?
I asked for it in my original contract. And I think they've forgotten that they promised that I could take a stab at it, because when they decided the audiobook, they gave me a list of a couple of author narrators that we're going to use. And they're like, we like this narrator and we like this narrator. What do you think? And I was like, I'm not even going to listen to them because I wrote this book.
Right. Yeah. No, no.
Yeah.
But they made me audition. I had to submit. I had to submit a tape. And fortunately I was shooting something else that I was working on a TV show in Atlanta. And they had our ADR booth on the set and on the soundstage. And ADR is when you go in and after you've shot something. So often, despite the wiring and the boom and whatever, not everything comes out clearly. And so you have to kind of sync up whatever it is you're saying in the scene with how your lips are moving. And so you might add things afterwards just to make it sure it's all clear and the sound is all clear. And so I asked that guy, the guy who does that, is like, would you take me for like 3 minutes doing this, like reading my book? And he was so nice and like made me a digital tape, whatever, a tape of it, a recording of it. And I sent it off to them. They're like, okay, you can do it. I was like, I think so. Oh. No one knows these characters better than you.
Such a different experience. Like when I read it myself or you read it, it's the same words either way, right? But where I pause, where I have emphasis, like how the voices sound in my ears, like all these things are different. So who better than the person who created that world?
How it's supposed to be.
Was it awkward recording that? Like
very
saying
awkward. The day one, first day was very awkward. It was just me and my sound engineer / producer, a guy named Michael. I can't remember his last name right now, but I have it written here somewhere. He could not have been sweeter. So I'm sitting in a little sound booth and he's just outside of the sound booth working the control panels, but we're in a dark room, right? So we're in a completely dark room and I'm in my sound booth. I have the lines as they're being fed to me, whatever. And I've got a mic and whatever, and it's all insulated and it's like, you can't do anything. Like you can hear like little click, like you can hear saliva in your mouth. There's so many little things you can hear that will ruin a tape. And you're never aware that you make sounds you make when you speak that you were never aware until you hear it magnified back in your ears. So I guess at the beginning of the New York chapter, the first New York chapter, and I just like, we were having a break after the Bel Air chapter. I was like, I just want to tell you, this is going to get a little sexy. I just want you to be prepared. Please don't judge me. And he said, there's absolutely nothing you can say in that booth that I have not already heard and far away. And I was like, so I guess he's done like some romance and he'd done some like erotica audiobooks. And
okay.
He was like, I did a book and there was the very first scene, the narrator's doing it. It's like a massive orgy scene and it was ridiculous. And I was like, okay.
Well, okay. I'm good then.
Like, okay, I don't have an orgy scene.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine, that would be, I'd probably give that warning too. Be like, don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was super nervous. But then at some point, like very early on, I was like, okay, I'm an adult.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm an actress.
Yeah.
Time is money. I want to get this right. I can't sit in here and giggle every time the word dick shows up on the page.
Right. Right.
I don't even know this man. And he's like,
or ball slapping, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I felt like a 14-year-old. Like, oh my God, I'm see.
Right. Yeah. Oh. Do you record the parts? Like, are you going back and forth or do you like record all in one voice?
You read it all at once. right? But he breaks you if like, he'll say, okay, go back two lines. I missed something or whatever. You said that word wrong or, okay. And then, so we recorded, it took like about 3 days, 3.5 days, I think. And then I came back like maybe a month later for little glitches that we had to fix. And that was it.
So you're transitioning between Hayes' voice and Solène's voice. And exactly. Oh, that makes it even more impressive.
Doing full on fights and arguments and party scenes and and then like and someone else and you're like, then you're a 12-year-old girl and then you're like a British guy and then you're like an Indian guy. Wow. And yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot.
I love that it came from you though. So I just
right because I wrote it. So I
you know, exactly. That was special.
Right.
So I love that. And I think that's why, I mean, again, there's such a following of this book. Everyone loves you, the book, the characters. It's just like this fandom for the idea of you. Everyone loves it. And I think that that just makes it even that much more special that we get you in the audio too. So
yeah,
I love that.
And I love the things you've done to enrich the world and make it even more real. Like in your Facebook group, I found the playlist songs that you listen to when you're writing. I've been listening to that for the last couple of days. And oh, just like makes me feel even bigger.
Because I've given them some. I haven't given anyone my exact playlist.
I feel so I did see that actually. But it had like, I'm pulling it up right now. There's, you know, some James Blake. There's Ed Sheeran. There's...
And I can tell you what scene is, what music is, what I was writing for each scene. Like that James Blake song is definitely them having sex at the Chateau Marmont.
Ooh. And depending on maybe the only location I've been to that is in your book.
They're going back to Vancouver in the sequel.
Yeah, right.
JK. They're going to stop in Deep Cove for donuts.
Yes.
Honey's Donuts.
Shout out to Honey's Donuts, the best hiking fuel the Vancouver area.
I've got to come out there. I've never been out there.
You do.
I've never been to Canada. I gotta.
What?
We're gonna get her out here.
Connecticut, and you've never been to Canada?
I know, never been to Canada. I know, but I do have. I really want to go to Banff. That's like on my to do list, my travel list. But I gotta come see you, Cheryl, too. I know. I've never.
You do.
I think my husband might have. My husband's from Seattle, though, so that would make sense.
Oh, yeah, Vancouver's very close to Seattle.
But
I've never been to Banff, but Vancouver is gorgeous. And Montreal is like a hop, skip, and a jump from you, and it feels like you're in Europe and you should go.
I know. My stepdad has spent a lot of time there. I think he lived there at one point
I had cousins who grew up there, and so we used to go at least once a year.
And my best friend.
Oh, amazing.
Like it is really like, how have I not been? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's like so many people in my life from there or whatever.
Needs to move up your bucket list, Lauren.
It does. I know. I'll make it happen. I will.
Do you, Robin, do you have any fave places or, you know, foods, restaurants, anything like that from when? Because you would have filmed 50 Shades here right? In Vancouver. Sorry.
So I discovered the best Chinese food I've ever had in my life. And this is also, which I've not been to China. So. But Bao Bei, have you been there?
Say it again.
Bao Bei.
Oh, I have had Bao Bei. Yes.
Oh my God.
That is good. So and the Honey's Donuts, of course.
The Honey's Donuts. I went to a bunch of places. Bao Bei was just really special. I just kept trying to go back.
Where did you stay when you were here? Downtown? So,
like almost every other production, maybe 80% of productions. And I don't know if it's still the case, but at least pre-COVID, from LA, put their actors up at the Sutton Hotel.
Oh.
And so if you go into the bar, if you don't know anyone, if you're there for a TV show or a movie, whatever, and you don't know Catherine, and you go into the bar at the Sutton Hotel, like around 6 o'clock, it is like a college dorm because it's every actor you've ever like seen or worked with or whatever. And you're bound to run into someone that you know that you've worked on with them on the project.
I actually met Martin Short in that bar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A friend of mine was doing an improv thing with him and
and it's that's where I stayed and I loved it because I could walk everywhere and go to museums and shop on what's it called Robson
Robson's right there
there were a lot of great places
I'm missing out.
I loved it.
You are.
I have FOMO.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And that other little area was it the Gaslight District, is that what it's called?
Gastown.
Yes,
yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, it's like the very historic area of downtown.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All the little neighborhoods. Everything is gorgeous.
Yeah. Robin, can I ask you one question about the ending?
Yes.
Something I've always wondered. So when, you know, Hayes comes back to Solène's house, and they have that, you know, kind of heartbreaking exchange and final goodbyes, and she realizes that the only way she can actually make him leave is to convince him that, you know, it wasn't real, and says, you know, that it's maybe it wasn't you I was in love with. Maybe it was the idea of you. Does he believe her? Is he buying this? Or is he just accepting it to go along with her wishes? Do you think does he buy it?
Oh, I feel like it's so emotional. I feel like I should not tell you. I feel like that's
really oh, okay.
Ooh, okay.
Okay.
Did you know?
I like that answer.
I mean, I know what I think.
Yeah.
But
I know what I think too.
Right. But I feel like everyone's going to have what they think. And I think that's totally valid. And I wrote it in a way that is a little ambiguous, and you can go with what you want.
I love that.
I mean, it feels like it's also how well you know Hayes. I mean, I feel like I gave you enough of him.
Mm. Yeah.
So you probably... whatever you're thinking is probably right, but I'm not going to say yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know that was that line? Did you know the name of the book before you wrote that line?
I did not. I did not really have a working title. I was calling it Unfolded.
Mm. Oh, that would have been beautiful as well.
Awesome. My agent thought that was too quiet a title. Like I needed something more oomph. So I threw out a bunch of different things. He wasn't crazy about any of them. And I was like, I'm going to figure it out. Just hold on. And literally, I mean, after like 3 weeks into like coming up with all these different ideas, I just combed through the book, like word for word. And I said, is there anything in here, like in the book itself that I could use? Mm-hmm. And then when I got to that bit, she says like, maybe it was the idea of you. I was like,
there it is.
Yeah, that was it.
Both of those titles actually have multiple repetition, right? Like the references to Hayes unfolding her, and then the beautiful painting that he buys for her, Unclose Me, which is so similar. And then, you know, even very early on, I think there's something where they're having the exchange about him being Hayes Campbell versus Hayes.
Yes.
And him saying, you know, that's not me. It's just an idea.
Yeah. I
love it.
I love that. I love how that came about.
Yes. And him saying, you know, that's not me. It's just an idea.
Yeah. I love,
love it.
I love that. I love how that came about. Now, one last question, Robin. I'm just looking at our time. I don't want to keep you too much longer. What are you reading right now? And what would you recommend we read?
Oh, my goodness. I'm not reading anything. I'm bad.
Okay. Well, what would you recommend us?
If we love this book.
The last book I read that I really enjoyed that I have not spoken about really, because last summer I read a bunch of good books. Like, I'll just give quick shout out to those. I'd read 7 Days in June by Tia Williams.
I loved that book.
Yeah, so well done.
Beautiful. Yeah,
she's I'm going to add that to my list.
And I feel like she's like my sister from another mother or whatever. And another mister, that's what it is. Sister from another mister.
It works both ways.
<It's> fine.
7 Days in June, The Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dave, I really enjoyed. They're making
that
a film
very good.
Now.
Yep.
And I really liked Malibu Rising, Taylor Jenkins Reid. Mm. Taylor Jenkins Reid's last novel. But in this fall, I read a book that was one of the things, like sometimes you read books and you're like, these are amazing, but I couldn't have written this book. Like this was not my story to tell or whatever, or that's not the kind of book that I can't see myself writing that book. And every once in a while I read a book and I think that I should have written that book. That doesn't happen very often. But this book I read this past fall is called The Paper Palace.
I read that one.
Mm-hmm. By Miranda Kelly Heller, something like that. I should memorize her name by now. I look it up every single time I tell someone. And like literally I told someone within the last 7 days, I've told someone and I have to look up again because like, The Paper Palace.
Miranda Coley Heller.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought that book was so wonderful and beautifully done and intense and just gorgeously written.
It was gorgeously written.
And dark and so evocative of New England and Cape Cod and like
It was very descriptive. But very descriptive. Now, knowing that you read that, who do you think she chose at the end?
Oh, you know what? I read an interview with her and it kind of upset me.
Really? Why?
So she takes off the ring and then she goes, swims across the ocean. So she's going to the younger guy, the guy from her childhood, whose name, I can't remember anyone's name.
Jonah,
maybe
something like that. But yeah. So is that her?
That's what she did. But I mean, if you've read the idea, Dave, if you know me at all, you know, I'm a huge Anglophile. I'm like, how could you leave the British?
I was like, wait a second. I like kept going back and I'm like, wait, did she go? Who'd she?
The ring off.
Yeah. So I was like, it had to be.
Maybe she took it off for safekeeping and she's coming right back to it. I don't know.
I know. So do you think, so did
you? I love that kind of ending. And I think she went for the other guy.
I think she did too. That was kind of my, yeah. And I felt bad for her husband, but you know, yeah. Anyway, just a little side.
I just thought the detail and description were so beautiful.
It was very, yes, it was so vivid and beautiful, her very descriptive. I'm with you. I felt the same about it. It was beautifully written, but yeah, nice to know what you thought too. Yeah.
Robin, you mentioned, Taylor Jenkins Reid, mm-hmm. you narrated a part on one of her audiobooks as well, right? For Daisy Jones and the Six. On my TBR.
Oh my gosh.
I know I do. It's literally sitting right over there on my shelf. And
Have you read it or listened
to
it?
It's on my TBR too, but everyone tells me to do the audiobook because the audiobook, everyone says, and I did not realize that you did that. Everyone says it's phenomenal, specifically the audiobook, like both of them, but everyone's like, you need to listen to the audiobook. So okay, it's
so I'm going to give you, I don't know if it's not a spoiler really.
Okay.
The entire story is told through interviews with these members of this band after the fact. So the story takes place in the 70s rock band, and they're looking back on this journey of theirs. And so it's just, I think it's brilliant. It's just interviews. That's all it is.
Interesting.
Like there's no expository, whatever. It's just interviews. And it's such a brilliant way to tell a story. But yes, there are different characters. And if you have a hard time keeping track of it, who's saying what now? Like, I'm guessing if you're reading an audiobook, you'll hear she has different actors playing the different members. And so we all have different voices.
Yeah, love it.
Yes, that's what I thought can't wait. Was unique about it, that it was like a full cast.
Right. Yeah, it's a full cast.
But no, I know. Everyone keeps yelling at me that I haven't read that book either. I'm like, I will. So it's on my list.
I mean, it's enjoyable anyway, but Taylor does this thing. I'm not even going to tell you.
It's okay.
Maybe I'm going to tell you a little bit, but it was something like, I don't know. It was close to the last chapter, second to last chapter, that I like close a book and I cried because it was so brilliant. And I was like, why did I come up? That was the most brilliant thing ever. Like it was just so, there's something there that is just going to like rock your world.
All right. You know what?
I love it.
I'm going to Amazon it today.
Not like cry, the idea of you cry. It's not like she broke her heart or whatever. Or she broke his heart. And then you're going to cry again at the end. It's beautiful. It's really well done.
I think it's actually at my local bookstore. I should go down there. I have a little like mom and pop bookstore down the road. I'll go get it and I'll read it. Cheryl, we should do it together.
Let's do it together. And then we'll reconvene here and talk about it.
And the Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which is a book.
Oh, loved it. Yes.
Which is very different. It's a very different storytelling, right? But also completely compelling.
Yeah.
She's a brilliant artist. And I've known her for years and years and years. She worked for my husband.
Oh, wow.
A zillion years ago.
Funny.
My husband owned this company, started this company that did like casting online. Like he came up with the software so that casting directors would upload auditions to a secured website, whatever. And when he was first starting, she worked for him because she'd worked for a casting director and wanted more flexibility so she could work on her writing. And so she worked for him for a bit while she was writing her first book.
Oh, perfect.
Published it, took off and flew the nest. But it's been such a joy to watch her just crank out book after book and each one like more brilliant than the last. It's just like incredible.
I have another one from her in my, oh, One True Loves. That one I know people really love. That's in my pile. I've got a stack. I just got finished reading this very long, well, not very long, but very, very, well, long in the sense that each book is very big series. So I'm like, I'm going to take
a five. It's a five book series. It wasn't insubstantial.
I know, but like 700-800 pages you were talking each book. So, yeah. You know, I'm like, I got to go back.
What series is that?
A Court of Thorns and Roses.
Oh, I've heard of this.
By Sarah.
It's 700 pages by each book, and it's 500, and it's five books. It's,
well, one of those is a novella, so it's a skinny one. Shorter. But then, yeah.
The others are 700.
It's, but yes, I think the last book was like.
You read a 700 page book.
Yeah. I honestly blows my mind how, but I mean, I read them quickly, but that's where I was like, okay, I needed to finish. You know, when you start something, you're like, you got to finish the whole series. I don't want to read anything else in between because then I'm going to forget what's going on. Like, no. So I'm like, I just got to do that. And now I'm like, before I start her next series, I'm going to read like some short ones. I've got like a stack on my nightstand. My husband's like, you just keep buying books. And he's like, are you going to read them? I'm like, yes.
I have so many. So many. I have, I think I read The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand. I think that was
close. Oh.
And I started and I almost finished but did not quite finish The Historian, I think that's what it's called, and that was damn near, that was like 700 pages. I feel like I read 600-700 pages in
that. Yeah, I mean, they just,
I love a hefty book. I mean, I am a big fan, as I said earlier, about the Outlander series, and those books are round about 1,000 pages
each. One of 1,000 pages?
And there's 9 of them.
Yeah, and still going.
What is she doing? Like, I don't understand how people can be that prolific. I just don't.
She takes a long time. So she's been, the first one came out 30 years ago.
Oh.
And the last one just came out last year. So she's planned it as a 10 book series. Yeah. It's
a done.
10 book, 10 big books. And then she has some novellas and side stories as well. But she just lives in that world, yeah. I guess, full time.
Wow. Crazy.
I think I get very well. She moves her characters around, so she, right? That the whole idea in time and place.
Yes. It's a story. She says it's a story of a marriage. So they meet when they're, you know, in their 20s. Now they're in their 60s. It's told through their whole life, and they move from Scotland to France to America.
Yeah. It's a fantastic series. I actually have only read one book, but I'm a big fan of the show. Right. But again, I need some shorter reads, you know, like summer easy reads right now before I go back.
We'll get Daisy Jones in there before you go back.
Oh, sure.
So you talked earlier, Lauren, about going to your local bookstore to pick up Daisy Jones. Robin, where else can we go if we want to support you? We obviously already have the idea of you, but for those that don't have it, you know, where can we, do you have any other current projects going on, ways we can support you?
Got nothing. No, I don't. I've got this. No, I don't. Not writing wise. I have a show streaming right now, but it's completely different from the idea of you. It's called A La Carte.
And A La Carte.
It's on this station called All Black. It's A L B L K, I think, or B L C K. So bad that.
Okay.
But it's a story about like 20 somethings hooking up in LA. And I just played one of their bosses, and it's a really fun, fabulous role. She's kind of like, she's described as like Naomi Campbell meets Meryl Streep and Devil Wears Prada. Like, she's a fashion.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Totally, like, not a role I've ever played, and like crazy, insane woman. And it was a lot of fun. And then I have another project coming out in the, but I don't know that, I was in the fall. I don't even know when it's coming out. It's a new Netflix series, limited series called Jigsaw.
Ooh, okay.
I guess I can say it now because we've wrapped. I don't know how much I can say because I never released my thingy. So I don't know.
Okay, that's okay.
We'll just leave it at that.
It's going to be really awesome. And that's all I can say.
Awesome.
And otherwise, I've been writing. And I'm hoping to finish this book and get it to my agent and for him to say, this is wonderful. Let's sell it.
I hope so anything too. You put out there, Robin. So we are just thrilled. And where can everyone keep up with you on Instagram, if you don't mind?
I'm on Instagram at Robin Lee, and it's RobinnLee. Same for Twitter. And Facebook, it's like The Robin Lee, but Instagram and Twitter are probably the best. And if you read The Idea of You and you love The Idea of You, you can come join our group, private Facebook group Facebook, whatever.
I think that you are active in.
I'm very active. Yes.
Cheryl and I remember. That. So it's a great group. I love that there's that common ground. Yeah. You know, I love when people can just come together over the love of a book, you know, yeah. like it's yeah. just a special really little community. Kind of
magical. It's so funny because I had a page for it originally when I started. It's a page and someone, and I cannot remember who, I can kick myself. I can't remember her name off the top of my head. I can go back and look through all my messages, but she inboxed me and said, you know, you should make it a private group and not just a page because people are more likely to say what they're mm-hmm. really doing.
Yeah. It's yeah. very active. Very active in there.
Yeah.
Great book recommendations. It's awesome.
We actually have one of those for our Outlander group as well. So private page that everybody can just, you know, bond over, get to know each other over. And it's lovely. Yeah.
And then there's a spin-off group off of the IDW group, and it's called H All the Love. And it's for fans of the book who love Harry Styles.
Oh.
How
do you feel about that?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I started specifically because one of the fans was like just posting about Harry. This is like when the book first came out. She's like, can we talk about Harry Styles more? I was like, Kristen, it's Kristen. I'm just gonna start your own group and you can go over there and talk about Harry all you want. That group's got like 800 something pages. And sometimes it's like it's on fire. They don't hold back. And but a lot of them have become friends. They've gone to concerts together. They've traveled together to go to concerts. Like one of them's like flying from New York to Denmark and meeting up with a couple of others.
That's so
there
cool.
to go and see them in Denmark and then Sweden. Like they're crazy in the best way to be crazy, I guess.
Yeah. Like and you've done that. You've not made them crazy, but you brought them together, right?
Right. It's not just for random Harry fans. You have to be an IDW fan because you have to
I mean, I wouldn't know Lauren if we hadn't been brought together through a book. So, the words do wonderful things.
They really do.
I love that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Robin. It has been so amazing to chat with you. This has been so fun for the both of us. So I hope you enjoyed it as well. Got to know you a little bit better.
Thank you.
And we are just looking forward to whatever else you're going to give us out there. So
we will keep our eyes open and spread the word when we can. And until then, I'll just be over here with my little.
Look at your haze.
She's got her haze bookmark.
My haze book boyfriend. Yeah. Is there a friend of ours online who creates these book bright friends? And I could not pass up this one. So.
It's very cute. It's very adorable. Without a face. Haze without a face.
I'll be over here with my haze
at that point.
My Lafrag.
It's the idea of, are you drinking scotch at 10 o'clock in the morning? Wow.
Listen, Cheryl. When Cheryl goes all in, she goes all in.
Look at that with the book.
Yeah, I love a theme, Robin.
She does love
it. And so I got to get in the mood for it, right? So I had a little bit of scotch before we said hello to you, and I'll have a little bit of scotch afterwards. But that's okay. I'd have no other commitments today, so.
Enjoy.
It's too funny.
Thank you
anyway,
so much.
Thank you so much, Robin, and we hope we can chat with you soon.
Thank you.